This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Saturday mornings can only mean one thing. The biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Hello, folks. Alyssa Walker-Campbell going to guide you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We always, at the top of our show, we love to connect with our audience. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. Our Final Four coverage continues as we get you ready this afternoon for Baylor, Houston, Gonzaga, and UCLA. We'll also take time to preview the Women's Basketball National Championship game, PGA News and Notes, the Valero Texas Open, and we're going to preview the Masters. Always a true pleasure to be hanging out with the Big E in studio, and that is my fabulous producer, Jack McCraw. Hello, Jack.
Hello, E. This is the happiest week in sports for me with opening day and the Final Four fast approaching.
Okay, so baseball is back. So 2021 season, what are you looking forward to the most?
It has to be my Houston Astros. I know there's a lot of storylines going on. Can the Yankees finally get past this playoff hump and make it to the World Series for the first time since 2009? How good are the Dodgers that could potentially win 120 games is what some people are projecting. But for me, it's the Houston Astros. Last year, they finished with a sub-500 record of 29-31. But this year, I'm looking for a bounce-back year from both Jose Altuve and the rest of this Houston Astros team.
Okay, so the Astros season, it is underway. In fact, they will face the Athletics today. But take a step back, and what are your thoughts about as far as spring training? How concerned? Is this an indicator 6-14? I mean, like, what do you think?
No, I don't think spring training records have anything to do with it because the Kansas City Royals had one of the best records in baseball in spring training, but they're not projected to win more than, I'd say, 60 to 70 games, but that could be surprising. No, I don't think spring training records have anything to do with an outcome of a regular season, but it's nice to know that the Astros have been facing good pitching from both the Mets and the Nationals, and they're really ramped up to go, and they should be able to win this American League West division.
Okay, so what are some of the key questions that they must answer in 2021?
Can they keep their star players? Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke, and Carlos Correa are all pending free agents after the 2021 season. And will they be able to keep the band together post-2021?
Okay, speaking of star players, how do you think the Astros will fare after the departure of George Springer?
They have Miles Straw to play center field, and okay. It looks like his bat from spring training has been pretty good, but we'll see if he fits in. You can't replace George Springer is the quick answer.
Okay, the Astros conversation is going to continue. That's because Brian McTaggart, the Astros beat reporter, is coming up next at Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
We are so glad you are with us. Join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. We always like to pause, recognize the folks that make it happen at Sports Map Radio Network, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts, where you are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest prices. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts. Better prices every day. Well, here we go. It is time to crank up the 2021 season. Baseball is back. And as promised, it is time to shine the spotlight on the Houston Astros and the expectations for the upcoming season. Right now, we're going to visit with the Astros beat reporter and writer, and that is Brian McTaggart, who is rested and ready for the big season ahead. Hello, Brian. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Alyssa?
Hey, it's great to have you back on the program, and we're super excited. We're here in Houston, and the Astros season is underway as they face the Athletics. But let's just kind of take a step back. Let's get your thoughts on spring training. They did finish with a losing record, 6-14. Is this an indicator of how the season's going to play out? I mean, give us the pulse. What did you learn?
No. The record doesn't mean anything. I mean, they probably had their ace starting lineup together at any point, probably in only two games, and a lot of those games had minor league pitchers pitching. So, you know, records in spring training don't mean anything. It's just about the guys getting their reps and getting their work in, you know, especially the pitchers. But, I thought I saw some good signs if you're an Astros fan. I thought Jose Altuve swung the bat very well. Bregman had a little bit of a hamstring strain, but had to take a lot of work on the backfield and rushing the ball. he says he's in the best shape he's been in entering a season in his career. So, you know, that's a very good sign. He also added 27 pounds to, you know, to try to get through his swing wow. a little bit better. Carlos Correa looks like he picked up where he left off in the playoffs last year, hitting the ball very well. And I guess probably the biggest development is Miles Straw, who's taking over for George Springer in center field. Had a very nice swing, swinging the bat. So, you know, if he can keep that, swinging the bat. So if he can keep that going, you know, I think they'll feel good about it. But, you know, pitching-wise, they had a lot of young pitchers who are not quite ready for the big leagues yet, throw a lot of good innings. But, you know, they went out and signed Jake Odorizzi, you know, a week after they lost Framber Valdez to a broken finger. But Lance McCullers Jr. had his best spring, looks healthy, looks poised to have a big season. So a lot of reasons for the Astros to be optimistic. A lot of people are picking them to win the division, and you know, I'm one of those. I think they'll return and win the AL West again.
He is in his 18th season as the Astros beat reporter. Brian McTaggart is our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network. What I hear you saying is that the superstars, they've got to step up. Carlos Correa, he was impressive in spring, hit 308, and this is his contract year, so he's looking to make a big-time contract after this season. The Astros, they can't afford to lose another star player in free agency, right?
Well, yeah, it's tough to keep everybody. You know, they were able to sign Bregman a couple of years ago, Altuve before that, were not able to sign Springer. And now they were unable to sign Correa before the start of the season. So he's going to test free agency.
Okay.
You know, and that means, you know, the bidding's going to be open up to everybody. And it becomes really hard at that point, especially if you're the Astros, to sign one of those guys. I mean, the Astros already have one of the top five payrolls in the big leagues. They're going to be close to $210 million. That's a lot of money on a payroll, so it's not like the Astros are being cheap here. They do have a lot of money coming off the books for next year, but I think Correa probably wanted, if you look at what some of the other guys got, Francisco Lindor specifically, getting a 10-year, $341 million deal from the Mets, that's probably the ballpark where Correa wanted to be, and I guess the Astros just did not feel they could just give out $34 million a year for the next decade to Carlos Correa, as good as he is. And granted, Carlos Correa has never had a full, healthy, productive season in the big leagues. He's had some really good spurts, some good half seasons. He's been hurt a lot. But it just seemed like the Astros did not want to go there. So, you know, if they can't sign Correa, and it certainly doesn't seem like they will this winter, then they're going to have to go out and maybe go with the prospect Jeremy Peña at shortstop. There are some other shortstops on the market coming up, Javier Baez, Trevor Story, Corey Seager. You know, maybe those guys can be had for a little bit less of a price, but it certainly appears this will be the last year for Carlos Correa in an Astros uniform.
Okay, so we highlight one of their star players in Carlos Correa, but as I reflect on the 2020 season, 29-31, what are your expectations coming into this year? How good are they?
Well, last year was a fluky year. You know, it was a start and stop season. The players didn't know when to get ramped up, when not to get ramped up, and when they finally got going, it was 60 games, and that was it. And that led to a lot of injuries. That led to a lot of players underperforming, and that's across the league, not just the Astros. So, yeah, the Astros did finish with a losing record, but they went to the playoffs and turned it on, and guys like Correa and Altuve really started hitting in the playoffs, and they got within a game of the World Series. This is still a very dangerous team to me. Despite the fact they lost George Springer, they have Yordan Alvarez, the 2019 Rookie of the Year coming back. I think 1 through 6, their lineup is very good. If Yuli Gurriel can return to form, you're looking at 1 through 7. Miles Straw, if he can continue hitting like he did in the spring, now you're talking about 1 through 8. I think they're going to score a lot of runs. Pitching-wise, depth is going to be an issue, but again, they're not alone there. I think a lot of teams are going to be tested depth-wise when you go from a 60-game schedule to a 162-game schedule. But the fact they did sign Jake Odorizzi is going to help, and also Framber Valdez, the broken finger he suffered in spring training, is not serious. There were fears he was going to be out for the year, so they could get him back as well and add to the depth of starting rotation. So I think they're better than the A's. I think they're better than the Angels. I think those are the other two teams that are going to push them a little bit, but I certainly would be surprised if the Astros don't win the division. You know, you got to stay healthy. They got to get their core players, their four infielders who had down years last year, back to their levels they've had the previous few years, and I think they'll be okay.
Astros beat reporter Brian McTaggart is our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network, and you bring up a great point. You know, talking about last year, the modified schedule, it was just a weird year, 60-game schedule, no minor league games. What kind of impact does that have, if any, on the season that's underway and guys not getting the reps like they have in the years past?
Yeah, it made a huge impact. A lot of their younger players coming up just not having a minor league season, especially the pitchers.
Right.
And that competition not being there, just it almost stunts their growth for a whole season. Now, they were able to go to they had an alternate training site last year in Corpus Christi, and they had inter-squad games, and they worked out there. But it's not the same. But, you know, every team went through that. And, you know, the minor league season will return this year. It's going to start May 4th. Astros will move their AAA team to Sugar Land, a suburb in Houston. So they'll be able to shuffle players back and forth a lot this year, and I think they're going to have to. Pitching coach Brent Strom said the other day that, you know, they might have to get through, you know, use 20 different pitchers at some point this year just to get through the season. And I think I would take the over on that. But definitely having the minor leagues back and having some of the young pitchers like Peter Solomon, Tyler Ivey, Hunter Brown, some of the young guys that are coming up, having them now be able to go back and pitch a full minor league season is going to help get back on track to maybe help the team next year.
Give us an update on one of our favorites, and that, of course, is Justin Verlander, who probably won't come back this season. Of course, had the Tommy John surgery in September. Is there any chance? I mean, he could make it back by the end of September or October.
I don't think so. I mean, I guess if he wanted to push it really hard, but I just can't imagine that he would want to do that and then come back and pitch in relief just in the playoffs when he's entering what would be his free agent year. So I just don't see it. He's going to be a free agent after this year. He's going to want to sign as a starter. He doesn't want to be a reliever. And Justin said on more than one occasion he wants to pitch till he's 45 years old. So he's sort of like the Tom Brady of baseball. He's got a lot left in the tank. And I think coming back and trying to, you know, rush back and pitch in the playoffs in relief is not going to do much for the Astros, probably not going to do much for him as far as his free agent market is concerned. So, no, I do not expect Justin Verlander will be in an Astros uniform this year. The question is, will he be in an Astros uniform ever again? I mean, are they going to be in the market to sign him in the offseason? That remains to be seen.
Hey, his 18th season as the Astros beat reporter. Check him out, MLB.com. Brian McTaggart is our very special guest. Just give me a quick hit. You had highlighted and talked about Jose Altuve. Can he bounce back in 2021?
Yeah, he had a really terrible year last year. His batting average was almost 100 points lower than his career average. He never looked comfortable at all. And then in the playoffs, he had problems throwing the ball. And I think a lot of it was just mental. I mean, I think going through the sign-stealing scandal, I think that really weighed on him last year, and it really bothered him. I think he just wasn't in a good place physically, wasn't in a good place mentally. But from what we saw in spring training when I was down in Florida and talking to the people that were around Jose, you know, people were encouraged. They said he was bouncing around the field a lot more, smiling a lot more than he did the year before. He took some measures to work on his throwing. It seems like his throwing problems are behind him. He really didn't seem to have any problem throwing the baseball. Now, the proof is going to be, you know, at the start of the season, how's he going to do? And if he gets off to a good start, then, you know, maybe he's back to the Jose Altuve of old. I certainly think he's not going to be worse than he was last year. I think he'll be better. Will he return to his MVP form of 2017? I don't know. Probably not. He's 30 years old. But I think there's still enough talent, and he's young enough to where he could be a very, very productive player. He should be one of their best hitters in the lineup. He's also moving to the top lineup this year, to where George Springer had been the previous 5 years. So that's a spot that he hit in the lineup very well, won a batting title there. So he'll be back at the top of the lineup this year.
Good news. Baseball is back, and always a true pleasure to catch up with Brian McTaggart. Check out his work online, MLB.com, his 18th season as the Astros beat reporter. Stay safe, Brian. We look forward to another conversation.
Great visiting with you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Join us every Saturday, 10 to 12 Eastern Time on the Sports Map Radio Network. We are looking so forward to the Women's National Championship game on Sunday. I'm always ready to talk some women's sports and highlight the increasing value of the WNBA and the English Women's Super League. So it's time to buckle up. We're going to head to Chicago and visit with the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, and that is Adam Grossman, who is a leading expert in sports sponsorship and analytics. Hello, Adam. Good morning.
Great to be here.
Hey, it's nice to have you back on, and we always look forward to your blogs on sports marketing. And one of your recent posts caught my eye. It highlighted the WNBA's new partnership with Wilson to become the official basketball provider, starting with the league's 25th season this year. So what do these successes about the growing importance of women's sports and investments, what are we learning?
Yeah, I think we're learning that women's sports are valuable to companies, particularly, you know, when you're talking about Wilson and the new basketball, is Wilson Sporting Goods is very familiar to the sports space. They obviously, you know, one key element of their business is generating or is creating materials for sports, you know, whether that's basketball or apparel or equipment. So this definitely makes sense that they want to do that. But the larger thing is, you know, when we're talking about sponsorship, is that whether it's Wilson or companies who are non-endemic, so companies who aren't necessarily in the sports space, is that they're seeing increased women, increased value in working with women's sports, because women's sports are driving significant ROI in ways that are important to their business, whether that's better engaging with target customers, whether that's generating increased brand perception, or whether it's helping them reach the target customers. And one of the things that's interesting about women's sports generally, I was just talking about this with somebody who's a senior executive in women's sports, is one of the misconceptions is that a way to target women in sports or women fans or female fans is to go through women's sports. But actually, women's sports disproportionately reach men and male audiences, and they usually have a very engaged and passionate fan base. So if the goal is to reach that type of audience, that women's sports increasingly is a way to do that, and brands and companies and the their partners are increasingly seeing women's sports as an effective way to engage with their customers in ways that really drive significant value.
So, Adam, why do you think it's taken us so long to get to this point? I mean, why do you think so many brands have neglected the women's sports arena?
Well, that's a great question, and one I'm glad you asked, because I think it's one that we talk about a lot with our in our business, which is I think there's been historically there's been a conception that women's sports just doesn't have the same audience reach as men's sports. So that the reason that there's so, you know, that's always a criticism or a criticism of when people are saying, you know, whether it's Megan Rapinoe or Sue Bird or just other stars in women's sports are saying, well, why aren't we getting the same value? It's the counter has always been, well, you guys aren't reaching the same audiences. You don't have the same scale. You're not getting the television ratings that men's sports are. And I think what brands and the companies that work with sports are seeing is that that is one way, but certainly not the only metric that they should be using for and looking for a successful sponsorship. You shouldn't just be looking at the size of the audience, but you should be looking at the value of the audience and the value of what the sport is providing for a company's specific revenue and brand goals. So essentially, how does it make a company make money, and what are its goals from a brand perception perspective, and how can we better engage with our customers? And that's where I think there's been a real transition. And women's sports, to be fair to the criticism, women's sports have, you know, there are definitely times, whether it's the U.S. women's national team in the Olympics or the World Cup, there have definitely been times where women's sports, or even when you're talking about women's tennis and the ratings and the attendance figures, there certainly are instances where women's sports rival or exceed what men's sports produce. But it's not, you know, traditionally, and even now, it's not the case that on a consistent basis that women's sports outperform men's sports from a purely the number of viewers perspective. But women's sports do excel in a variety of other different ways, and ways that are important to companies. And companies are starting to see that and really see an opportunity, because it really is a significant opportunity in women's sports. And if you understand the value that women's sports provide from a fan engagement, audience, consumer demographic, in ways that are really important to companies, and increasingly as companies are using data to drive their decision-making, this is something where women's sports can really shine.
He is the CEO of Block6 Analytics, founder of Block6 Analytics, and recognized as the industry leader. His work has been featured in Forbes Sports Business Journal and the Washington Post. That is Adam Grossman, who's our very special guest. So as we talk about women's sports and their sponsorships, what has changed? Because in the past, it's always been an afterthought. I mean, we talk a lot about gender equity and improving on that, but there has been a shift that has taken place.
Yeah, I think it's the rise of star power, particularly. One of the things that we look at as a company is that, and one of the things that this is seems very obvious, but is that, you know, fans love stars. I mean, that seems very obvious and very intuitive, and it's both obvious and true. And I think there's been a rise of female athletes who have turned themselves into stars. And I mentioned, obviously, Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird and Alex Morgan in women's sports, on the WNBA, WNBA side, or, just throughout, whether it's WNBA or NWSL. There's just been a real emphasis and a real development of women as star and star athletes that have large, particularly social platforms. Also, you can see that even the ownership groups, particularly a good example is Angel City with the NWSL and the ownership group that's come into there, is that there's a conception that women's sports has been and is on the precipice of a real explosive growth cycle. And the ratings particularly, I know we talked about not necessarily relying on quantity metrics, but one of the things that's been something that's been really valuable is the Challenge Cup for the NWSL and the ratings of the WNBA have been significantly higher than people had expected, particularly in the 2020 season, particularly when there was COVID. And you would think there would be a negative impact, but it seems like actually there was a positive impact on women's sports. And if women's sports are doing well at a time when COVID's occurring, that's really a good sign of the strength and stability of women's sports going forward. I also do think one of the things that, one of the other things that's really come into play is that there's been a rise of cause marketing and companies really using their values as a way to differentiate themselves in the marketplace to say, in the past, companies have tried to avoid or be neutral. There's a famous Michael Jordan quote about, selling sneakers to Republicans and Republicans buy sneakers too. And the idea of we should not be using, we should not be, which is actually not true and not true in the way that it's stated and it's been overblown. But the larger point of companies wanting to avoid social issues or what is perceived to be social issues or gender issues or equality issues or inclusion issues has really dissipated, particularly in the past couple of years. Companies are more frequently leading with their values, and the audience in particular of women's sports is one that really prioritizes values. And those don't always have to be diversity, equality, inclusion, or gender equity. There's a lot of values-based fans in women's sports. And as companies are using that as points of differentiation, women's sports, again, not just because it's arguably, good for gender equality, it's also because that combined with the fact that it does drive significant and tangible benefit for these companies from a college marketing perspective, from an ROI perspective, and from an ability to reach their fans and customers perspective, that's really leading to an increase in these deals and should continue to lead to an increase in deals, both at the professional level and the collegiate level.
He is the CEO of Block 6 Analytics. Adam Grossman is our very special guest. Our time is starting to wind down. And, just as we reflect over the past 12 to 13 months, 2020, such a wild year. How did the coronavirus impact women's sports marketing? We talk about the growth of the WNBA, women's soccer, but women's golf really took off during this pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another great example of women and star power. There's been a lot of stars that have been developed from the women's golf perspective, whether it's Michelle Wee or otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think, one, I think golf as a whole, because, their golf participation as a sport, as you, I think, know from your own experience, has seen a spike. We saw a spike during COVID just because it's a very, it's a friendly sport, both being outside and being able to socially distance. So I think there was a spike in participation, but specifically with women's sports, I think it's a lot of those factors that we talked about. It is there's a growing interest in women's sports. Again, there's a growing interest from both male and female fan bases, but particularly from male fan bases. There's also a growing interest, in terms of particularly when you're talking about women's golf from an international perspective. Women's golfers have significant, they do have significant presence in the United States, but particularly internationally.
Yes.
There's a huge presence and a huge following internationally for women's golfers, and particularly in markets that companies are really excited to enter, whether that's in Asia and Korea specifically, or Korea, China, Vietnam. Those are areas where companies are looking to grow, and those athletes really have strong presence in those countries. So I think it's, again, a combination of different factors, but I think those fact, I think women's golf, women's soccer, tennis, women's basketball, there's a huge growth trajectory for women's sports that's only starting to really come to fruition. And I, like I said before, I think COVID actually, whether it's through the Challenge Cup with the NWSL or the WNBA, I think there were opportunities for women's sports to really shine during COVID. And I think that's a momentum that can carry on through the Olympics this year And going forward for women's sports more generally.
It is an exciting time for women's sports. The CEO of Block 6 Analytics has been our very special guest, and that is Adam Grossman. Check him out, block6analytics.com. Thanks so much for joining us this weekend, and stay safe, Adam.
Thanks for being here. Stay safe as well.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. We're going to tee it up and go inside the rope with former PGA pro Larry Miller after this break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And as always, thank you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. Be sure and mark it down. Join us every Saturday, 10 to 12 Eastern Time. And indeed, it has been a very busy week in golf. The Augusta National Women's Amateur Tournament, it is underway. And the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio. The Texas swing continues as the PGA Tour was in action last weekend in Austin. So we're ready to tee it up with our weekly PGA News and Notes segment. Always an honor to roll up our sleeves and get after it. And that is when former PGA pro, the great Larry Miller, joins us. Good morning and happy Saturday, Larry.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good to be back again and heating up right before the Masters. We got a heck of a lot of golf to talk about and watch in the next 7 to 10 days.
Absolutely. Well, ladies first. So let's start with the 2021 Augusta National Women's Amateur that's underway. It's highly anticipated. We are looking so forward to everything getting underway, and I've been watching because it features the best of the best in women's amateur golf. So what have been some of your early takeaways? And Larry, do you have a favorite?
You know, I'm got a little partial to the home cooking here. We have an LSU gal, LSU golfer that is ranked actually number four in the amateur world rankings. Jennifer Lindblad from Sweden, and she didn't get to play last year. She would have been playing, but of course they didn't have it last year because of the pandemic. But she's primed and ready to go, and I think the number one player is Beatrice. I can't think of her last name, but anyway, it's going to be. Tell you what, we were there. Connie and I were there for the inaugural event two years ago, and I was just amazed at how good these girls can play. You know, they only had one practice round. They had never seen Augusta National before, and they got to play one practice round and then play the course. And Jennifer Kupcho shot 67. With one trip around the course, and there were another bunch of 69, 70, 71. Anyway, it was amazing to see how good they play, and especially with the greens, because, you know, Augusta National from tee to green is pretty benign, really. The fairways are very generous. You get a lot of roll on the fairways, and the greens are huge. So, I mean, you can take almost any single-digit handicapper. He's going to hit a ton of greens out there. And it's all about the greens there. I mean, you could three putt every green if you don't know the course and never have played it. So that's why I was so astounded at the scores that they shot, not having any experience out there. But boy, they can really play. And I think our girl from LSU, Lindblad, is going to be a force to reckon with. She's a great player. And she's won a bunch of tournaments, so she knows how to win.
Well, I've got my eye on Rose Zhang, and we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. As always, we go inside the ropes with former PGA pro, and that is the great Larry Miller. As we talk about and highlight the Augusta National Women's Amateur, of course, this event, Larry, was established to inspire greater interest and participation in the women's game. And it's been very exciting to watch. It's rewarding, you know, for these players to watch them fulfill their dreams. So what are your thoughts on just how meaningful this is for the women's game and for the future of the sport?
Well, it's just extremely influential and motivational for the young girls. I was also astounded at the number of people that were watching 2 years ago in the gallery. I mean, it looked like a regular tour event, just tons of people and lots of young ladies, young girls, and they watched how good these girls play and also that they got to play there. I mean, what an incentive that is to make that field and get to play a couple of rounds or three rounds two rounds, actually, one practice round and one final round on Saturday. But But to get to play on the course and experience Augusta National, and not only that, but to see what the game can do for you. And they play so well that they were so impressive that I'm sure that all these young girls and ladies watching were very inspired to start working harder at their games. Mm-hmm. And it's going to, you know, and then the publicity that they get too around the globe is going to spur on, I think, a lot of interest in golf for young ladies, you know, and it really needs it because lots of women's golf scholarships go unused every year because there's not enough players. And so I tell people all the time, I said, listen, if your daughter, if she can get to shoot in the low to mid 70s, there's a great chance that she can get a college scholarship. And so that's another incentive. And so I think that this tournament is going to go a long way to boosting women's golf for sure.
You know, Larry, you mentioned that in 2020, of course, it was canceled due to COVID-19 and the pandemic. But in the inaugural season, as you mentioned, you and your wife, Connie, had an opportunity to watch Jennifer Kupcho, the world's top-ranked amateur, to play. And her final six holes, she was 5 under par. I mean, that's hard to believe, thinking, I didn't realize they only had one practice round. She had an eagle on that par 5, 13th, and, you know, goes on to become the champion. You know, I was watching the replay of it on the Golf Channel, and I was like, you know what? You could not have scripted it any better. I mean, it was so memorable for the very first women's amateur, for the first time at Augusta.
Yeah, and we eyeballed that eagle she made.
Oh, you did?
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah, we followed her group the last 5 or 6 holes and got to see those birdies and that eagle. And Maria Fassi was, you know, right on her heels until Kupcho went on that run at the end. But then Maria Fassi, let me talk about her. She gets up on number one, and if you're familiar with the course and the hole, every other player in that field was aiming left of that bunker on the right and just playing it down, you know, down the middle and staying away from that bunker.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Maria Fassi gets up there and just blows it right over the bunker like it wasn't even there. She can hit it 300. And if you look at her and you say, well, how does she do that? You know, she's about what? About 5'7" or 5'8" and about 130 pounds and hits it 300 yards. But when you see how big of a turn she makes and how flexible she is and the speed she creates, you can understand it. And she was right there. I thought she was going to win it, but Kupcho went on that run at the end. And, you know, Fassi didn't lose it. Kupcho won it.
Well, and Maria Fassi, she's just so pure. I mean, strength, power, her precision, her game. What's so interesting is when you kind of compare and contrast Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fassi, I mean, their game is completely different, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's... You know, it's the other thing that I wanted to talk about that tournament was that the girls, you know, they not only got to play a practice round and play the course, but they got taken on a tour of the entire facilities, got to go up into the clubhouse and see all the nostalgia and memorabilia. You know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing for women's golf. But Kupcho, and getting back to Kupcho, you know, she stepped right onto the LPGA tour and didn't miss a beat, you know, and she's been contending a lot. And it's not going to be long before she's going to be a multiple winner.
You know, I was thinking about the women and competing in such a unique, a special event, especially for the first time. And, you know, the conditions out there, I mean, they're pure. These guys, the gals, they want to go out and they want to post a low round. You know, how do you manage your emotions and keep yourself calm when you're competing in an event that's so meaningful and really historic?
Well, you know, I preach all the time to the people that I coach and teach that they need to stay in their process and get immersed in the details of their process, their pre-shot routine, their planning, their preparation for every shot. And you have to really dive deep into that and get immersed in it. And really, that's all you're concerned with is the next shot and how do I prepare? What is my preparation? What am I trying to do? All these things, studying the green book and the position of the pin and getting the exact distance. And that's what I saw those girls doing in that tournament 2 years ago. I noticed that they were just buried in their information on every shot. And so what that does when you do that, it's not only great preparation, but it has a side effect too.
Mm-hmm.
It prevents you from drifting off into a negative territory, you know, start thinking about your swing or how you stand, how other players are playing, What are your chances? You know, where's the next par five where I can make a birdie? All these things that you think ahead on, and that takes you away from the present, and really it dilutes the quality of your preparation for the shot that you're about to play. And so I noticed that they were very good about that, and I'm sure they were schooled from an early age to do that and to prepare. And so that's why I preach that so hard to the kids, you know, that I coach to do that, because it's so important. And that's the way that you calm the nerves, and that's the way that you avoid, you know, getting off of your game and getting out of the groove.
You're listening to The Voice, Larry Miller. He is a life member of the PGA of America, former PGA Tour player, an author of four books on golf and performance. And so let's move ahead, okay, and shift gears, and let's talk about the Valero Texas Open here in San Antonio. Who's your sleeper?
Just like everybody else, Jordan.
Okay.
Jordan Spieth.
All right.
He's ready to win. Oh yeah, he's so ready to win. And, you know, it's interesting. I heard an interview with him, and he is not using this tournament as a preparation for the Masters. He's using this tournament as a tournament that he can win again and win. And he's not thinking at all about Augusta. He's trying to win the Valero Open, and he's been building up to it. You know, he's getting more confidence all the time. That close call he had there in the match play is only going to spur him on further and give him more confidence, because he could easily have won it. And I think he's got a home game this week. He's comfortable there. He's played many times. His game is trending in a really great upward fashion. And I don't see any reason why he can't win this week. He's going to putt well on those greens. And I think, I'll go out on a limb. I think he's going to win this thing.
Are you surprised, though, that he did make the decision to play so close to the Masters? I mean, he could be in Augusta getting in, you know, some serious practice rounds.
I don't think so. You know, I think, what is it? Old man Mo, right? Momentum. I think that,
yeah.
I think Jordan wanted to keep the momentum going. And if he takes a week off, then he comes back after a week layoff, and you know, he might have a half day or a day and a half of rust to deal with. But if he keeps that momentum going that he's got going right now, then he steps right into the next tournament, which happens to be the Masters, and he didn't miss a beat. And I think he's just going to just keep on playing well right on through it. So big things for him, I think, this week and next week. I'd be totally surprised if he doesn't play extremely well the next 2 weeks.
Well, it's so refreshing to just see how it's all coming back for him and coming together. How do you think he was able to keep his positivity throughout all of this, the ups, the downs, the twists, the turns?
I think he had a great game plan. I think he tried to fix it a piece at a time. I think that he knew that for openers, he had to get his driver under control and start hitting some fairways. So he worked hard on that, and he got that much improved. And then he started piecing together the other parts of his game that he felt needed shoring up, that maybe were lacking a little bit during his slump. And I think he had a great plan to fix it a little bit at a time and not just panic, you know, and change everything. And, you know, including his coaches and his caddies and everything else, he stuck with everything and decided to work on the things he had to work on to get out of it. And that's what he did. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's hitting so many more fairways now. He's putting great again. He's always been a great chipper. In his irons, he worked hard on his irons, and his iron play is much improved. So he's got all cylinders clicking right now. And I, you know, given the fact how well he knows that golf course, that's why I'm picking him. I just think it's going to be hard to beat him this week.
Okay, the Masters 2021 at Augusta National is less than 1 week away. Who is your favorite? I'm kind of thinking and leaning towards DJ, that he just might repeat that performance from the month of November.
Yeah, it's hard to pick against him there because of his length. You know, that little bit of difference. And even though Jordan can hit it 290 or 300, you know, 305 or so, you know, when you start get a guy that can hit it 330 and 340, that's three clubs difference into the greens. And at Augusta National, that's a big, big thing, because those greens, you have to be able to come in with high shots and hold those greens in the spots that you want the ball to land in, the target areas. And so it's a big advantage to hit the ball high and long. And they all hit it high and long, but not many hit it as high and as long as DJ does. And DeChambeau, too. DeChambeau's another one to watch out for at Augusta. I think he's really priming and aiming for that tournament. And he's got even more length than DJ has and hits it very high. So it's all about putting with him. I think DJ has been a little better putter than DeChambeau has been. But if DeChambeau gets that putter going at Augusta, he's going to be very hard to deal with also. It's going to be an interesting tournament. Got so many storylines and so many players trending upward that it's going to be an exciting, I think it's going to be a birdie fest, uh-huh. too. I think you're going to see low scores.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 1, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin Larry Miller and go inside the ropes. Hey, Larry, we are up against the clock. My final question for you is, since we're speaking of DJ, what were your takeaways from the incident last week at match play between him and Kevin Na? Got a little testy on that 11th hole on day 3. So what did we learn? And, you know, Kevin Na, he calls out DJ for picking up his ball.
You know, I have to laugh about it. I mean, it's just because Kevin Na is such a funny He's such a funny character, you know, and
so
I mean,
true.
To do that, and if you see the video, when you watched it,
put his hand on his shoulder.
It's the way DJ's looking at him, you know, like, it's like, what are you crazy?
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing this for? But I don't know, you know, hey, a rule's a rule. Nah was technically correct, but I don't think that he should have openly and publicly called out DJ like that. It made him look bad. But, you know, even though he was right technically, it made him look bad. He should have told him after the round.
Yes. Hey, glad you've been with us, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We've been going one-on-one with Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week inside the ropes. Enjoy all the coverage this weekend, and you and Connie have a wonderful Easter holiday. Thank you, Larry.
Oh, yeah, everybody, enjoy the golf.